Welcome back to Three Decades of Tragedy, History of the 30 Years' War. So last time I talked about the Conference at Westphalia, which had helped resolve any peace terms that would come to terms in this war. It was really the first of this type of conference in Europe at this point, and laid the groundwork for future peace conferences. I covered the main four players and their goals, which was diverse as each one had different needs, which created friction on top of internal issues plaguing each faction. This was not a simple negotiation, but the fact that it was even happening was amazing, as everyone kinda realized this war needed to end. We will come back to this eventually, but for now we head back to the war, as peace talks happen in the background. And with that covered, let's get started. The Atrii was actually in a good position at the start of 1644, as the Swedes had gone to war with Denmark, reducing their forces in northern and central Germany. There were still enough defensive forces to present a threat, but this meant forces could be massed to attack France, as it made tactical sense to attack France when their ally was weaker. We will cover the war against Denmark, but today we remain focused on Germany. The Imperials gathered an army of 21,000 troops, double the size of the French army of Germany, and with this larger force, they were able to actually go on the attack, which was the first time they'd been able to do this since 1637. The French had spent millions of livres rebuilding their army, but it was too weak at the moment to take new territory, and the forces under Turenne were unable to stop the Imperials from taking Überlingen by May 10th. The Imperials under Mercy were unable to take Hohentwiel, but blockaded the local German forces with a small portion of his troops, moving to retake territory lost in 1638. It was bad enough that Turenne had to come back through Alsace to keep Brissac safe, which if you guys remember was a major campaign just to take the heavily fortified fortress. Duke Charles was his usual finicky self, and he broke his agreements with France to start raiding Lorraine again, forces being sent to deal with that at the same time as the young de Enghien was sent to the Rhine to stabilize the area. However, the French commander was too late to keep Friedberg from falling, which had surrendered by July 29th to the Bavarians, and Mercy's next goal was to retake major footholds in the area. The French were certainly in a worse position now, and this situation proved how much Sweden and France needed each other to keep the Imperials contained. As drained as the Imperials were, they were still a major threat with large amounts of resources and men to call upon, even in this reduced state. France certainly had enough men to keep up, but it's still a matter of time and veterancy. But as the French arrived near Friedberg, they realized it was going to be a hard nut to crack. It was in a very secure position, and was at the end of a valley that led into the upper Danube and towards Tuttlingen. The entrance of the valley was surrounded by defensive terrain, the Schoenberg Hills to the south, the Meuse Woods to the north, and there was a stream close to the woods further blocking any attack from the north. Mercy had fortified the hills and woods, creating redoubts on Bull Hill, which was above the village of Ebingen. There was even a larger redoubt further up the hill, and another barrier up near St. Wolfgang's Chapel. Five crack regiments held this area while the rest of the army held the northern flank, behind the stream with entrenchments settled between Wendlingen and Haslach. Their numbers totaled around 8,200 cavalry, 8,600 infantry, and 20 guns. This wasn't insignificant, and the French had to be careful, as this was a strong defensive position all told. The French did outnumber them, having 9,000 cavalry, 11,000 infantry, and 37 guns, although numbers wouldn't necessarily win this battle. Donghain wanted to charge in and do a more direct attack like he had last time, but Turenne suggested that this was a bad idea at the war council on August 8th. And I agree with Turenne, as this could be a suicide attack, as this was heavily fortified, and he suggested that they go along the Rhine and cross the Black Forest at the Glotter Valley to the north of Friedberg. This would force Mercy to protect his line of communication and supply lines, and this is the standard battle tactic after this, as it makes sense to try to force a well-entrenched force out of their positions without a proper fight, which meant you would have much less casualties on your hands. Even if you outnumber your enemy, defensive terrain and redoubts are force multipliers, which are very good if you're outnumbered. However, Danghain was still dedicated to a frontal assault, though he did let Turenne take his forces to take the Bernstein Pass to the east, which would allow him to attack from behind Mercy's main army. It would be a long march, and Danghain was counseled to allow him to march, but a frontal assault was ordered by the afternoon of the 3rd. This is risky as it left only a few hours of daylight of fighting, or at least fighting in clear vision, but it was agreed upon, and the two generals synced up their attacks as Turenne moved his forces. The attack began at 5 p.m, and three brigades led an attack across the river, taking heavy casualties as they had to deal with the rough terrain and sharpened sticks and other obstacles that were put in their path. That slowed down progress, and two brigades were thrown back, and the third was led by Donghain, who was covered by musket fire. And say what you will about his methods, you can't say he's not brave and willing to get his hands dirty. His presence probably helped guarantee his success, and he supposedly threw his baton into the redoubt and told his men to retrieve it. He also rallied men from the first two brigades to rejoin the fight, and this reinvigorated the assaults, which pushed the Imperials out of their defensive positions, who had run dry on ammo from the long fight. The French had won this fight, but this wasn't the main line, and Donghain had taken double the casualties of the Bavarians, losing 1,200 men. While brave, this assault was costly, and Turenne hadn't done much better in his attacks. Turenne had attacked at the same time, sending 1,000 men into Banstein Pass. But unfortunately for him, the Imperials had set up 5 lines of defenses and entrenchments. An observation post had spotted the army, which allowed the Imperials to have reinforced the area with 4 regiments of infantry. The vanguard of Turenne was repulsed, and the fighting was intense, lasting till 4 a.m., when Turenne ordered the retreat, having taken serious losses, the last remains of Bernhard's old army, or at least Bernhard's infantry, having been effectively destroyed. The French had taken 1,600 losses, around 4 times the losses of the Imperials. It was another costly attack, but it had the effect of convincing Mercy to pull his forces back to the Schillerberg Ridge, which was further along the valley. It was a tighter defensive line, as he could not afford to be cut off by the French here. But the battle wasn't over, and this was definitely going to be a longer, more drawn-out fight compared to some of the others in this war. The next day was a wash for the French, as the French took over the old camp of the Imperials, but heavy rains turned the fields to mud and stopped any potential fighting, so the French generals decided to take the day to rest. This gave the Imperials time to fortify, creating a larger redoubt in the northern part of the ridge with 10 guns, another redoubt to the south with 7 guns, the higher one being called the Moonhald. There was a smaller camp/fort between the two of them, and this basically meant that an assault had to be frontal, as there was no way to flank around the left side of the forces, as the fort was too close to thick wood, meaning that there was no room for any attacks that could take advantage of that. The cavalry was massed on the Imperial right, and the French had to launch a frontal assault. The battle began the next day, August 5th, and it was sunny, the ground having been dried. The plan was for Turenne to assault the Wohenhald, while Donghain would lead a division to keep the Imperial left reinforcing the Imperial right. The plan fell apart when each general went to verify intel that the Bavarians were retreating, leaving a commander to accidentally order an attack on the left. This then drew in Turenne's forces, and a brutal battle started, which drew into the afternoon. The fighting was mostly useless on the French part, as even with Donghain's presence, they could not break through, which was the same once he moved to try to help his forces, who had tried to attack the Imperials, but the defenses were too strong to break. The French were clearly getting the worst of the fighting, and once again they were taking heavier casualties. The Imperials also put up a strong fight, their guns and musketeers providing covering fire that helped repulse several attacks by the French. Mercy's brother Caspar was involved in the fighting and died during it as he led the Imperial cavalry. Fighting ended by 5 p.m., the French retreating having taken 4,000 casualties in contrast to the 1,100 Imperials. And by retreating, I meant back to their camp, not from the battle as a whole. And the majority of the Imperial casualties were mostly wounded compared to dead. This was a severe loss, although Donghain supposedly said, "Bah, so many will be conceived in a night in Paris." Kind of a terrible thing to say, but it didn't seem to affect his perception, even though those men seemed wasted to me instead of being effectively used, and kind of bad to just be okay with wasting soldiers like that, on top of, you know, personal things of the regard for human life. But I will say, he didn't have much of a choice, and knowing his personality, he really wanted a frontal assault, even though the better option here would have been a longer attack against the supply lines or attacking the rear lines. But even though the Imperials had won the day in terms of battle, Mercy had taken his brother's death hard, and the issues that had been piling up were hitting him hard, which meant he was sinking into pessimism and depression. The Imperials were still outnumbered, and his men were drained and exhausted, his horses weak from the lack of feed. A fight like this certainly was one that would drain both sides, and it was certainly something where the French had more morale despite losing worse compared to the Imperials, which surprised me, but I suppose they didn't have a commander that was not really feeling it at the moment. The next part of the battle took place 4 days later, though the Bavarians kept their horses ready to fight the whole time, which was exhausting as that meant the horses were up and saddled. The French gathered 5,000 men from local garrisons, and the cavalry acted as the vanguard on August 9th, attacking the Glodder Valley, which threatened the communication lines of the Imperials. Mercy marched his forces to St. Peter's Valley, taking command of the monastery there. He managed to intercept and drive back the French cavalry led by Rosen, but the fact the Imperials were retreating more and more, and the low morale convinced the Imperials to retreat as a whole. Mercy's pessimistic mood probably didn't help, and the army retreated intact back across the Black Forest, letting the French capture the baggage train and some of the guns that had slowed down the army. The French had claimed victory, but to me it was more of a draw than anything else. The French had lost almost every engagement, and taken heavy casualties, but still managed to drive them back, although the Imperials managed to maintain their army. The French lost around 6,600 to 8,000 men, which was much higher than the Imperials. This was definitely a spun political victory, as the French played it up more than it actually was a true decisive victory. And the French are proving to be very, very good at this, for good or for ill. But the biggest effect was the fact that the Middle Rhine defensive position collapsed. So instead of trying to take Friedberg back, the French took advantage of this and rushed to take the Lower Palatine, encouraged by Turenne. This seemed to be the right move, as they took Baden and Speer, and Philippsburg after nearly a month-long siege, the city falling by September 12th. The city wasn't well defended, and the marshes around it were dry, making it easier to take, as marshes are very good defensive terrain for sieges. Maine also surrendered without a fight by the 17th, having less issues with the Catholics taking it compared to the Swedes. A small garrison was installed, but the city was mostly left to run itself. The city falling also hurt Mercer's campaign, as the city had fallen by the time he had arrived, so instead of trying to take a major fortified city, he moved to take Forsheim and Mannheim, trying to deny them as a launch base for the French. Although he couldn't do much more, as Gallus was defeated, so he, Mercer I mean, had to retire for the winter to see what next year would bring. Despite the technical success at Friedberg, it was undone by the French campaign, who created a way into Germany that got around the Black Forest. The French effort now focused on Franconia and Swabia, which were basically left on their own, which left Duke Charles out in the wind, so that's fortress at La Mothe and Long Way Falling. And I'm kind of getting tired of this guy, to be honest. He keeps showing up and causing problems, and then making a deal and not keeping that deal once things panned his way. And adding on to that is there was other things going on in the Empire, which meant reinforcements couldn't be sent to other parts of the war front. This battle is really good in showing how just because you beat someone in a battle doesn't mean you won the long-term war. You can win the battle and lose the war, sort of thing. The French have shown to have a good strategic view of the war, and redirecting away from Friedberg benefited them immensely. Mercier, however, did show his skill, and his generalship did shine in the battle, though by the end it seemed he couldn't maintain his morale, and even he was unable to rally his troops to keep fighting. He was still a very skilled general and should not be underestimated, and I put him up there as one of the better generals of the war so far. But that's it for this week, and next time we go into the war between Denmark and Sweden. I want to thank you all for listening. Social media links will be in the description box or on the links themselves. You can email me at 3decot@gmail.com. Reminder that I have a Patreon, and thanks to those who support me. And please review and spread the word, and I'll see you guys next time.